it, and I'm just wondering whether I should use the PA system or whether I should just address you without it. Can you hear me without it, or would you rather me
speak into it? What do you think?
Speak into it.
Like speak into it, yeah? Here we are then, I'll speak into it. Before I get going, I'd just like to say that this is my first trip, not only to Cork, but to Ireland. And I've been here for 2 days, and I really like it. Lovely city. Before I left, my friends and family said to me, you're going to love Cork. There's a lot going on. It's a vibrant city, very cultured. And so it is. It's well done. It's a nice place. I hope to come back when the weather is better, perhaps in the spring or the summer. A little bit about myself. I now live in a place called Clairo. Some of you may have heard of this village, Clairo. It was where the Reverend Francis Kilvert lived in the 1870s, and he wrote something called Kilvert's Diary. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
It's a minor sort of classic of English literature. Anyway, I'm doing a similar thing called a Clairo Diary, and if anyone would like to see it or read it, it's available as a Kindle download. I think what you've got to do is Google Amazon Kindle bookstore and stick my name in, Hugh Parsons, and it's HUWPARSONS, and you'll see all my books there. They're all available now as downloads. Many border people, I'm a bit of a split personality. I'm neither Welsh, I'm neither English, I'm a border person. And I think what that means is I can pronounce Welsh place names. But when I'm with Welsh people, Welsh-speaking North Wales or West Wales, I feel very English, very home counties. And when I'm with English people, I feel very Celtic and very Welsh. And a lot of border people are like that. So I'm going to start. I like to do new things all the time, and I've begun to not only write, but also to record songs, would you believe? I'm actually singing songs now. And a friend of mine called Rob Lee, a very talented musician, came to me recently and said, I've written a great blues tune here. Would you write some words for it? So I wrote this very simple piece. I'm going to read it to you now just to get myself into the groove. And it's called Tapping on Walls. When your checkered past catches up with you and some black and white truths leave you feeling blue. When the thin end of the wedge starts to hammer home through a long sleepless night in your bed alone. When time is only something you wonder how to kill and the clock's heavy hands appear standing still. Then try touching wood or tapping on walls to see if Lady Luck will answer your call. Or you can find a quiet church when you've nothing left to lose, where you can bend your knees or creak pews. When you're on the road to nowhere and can't turn back to the place you've left a dead end for the sake. When you can't decide which exit on the roundabout of chance will take you to the music where you could dance. When no one wants to hear a single word you say, like a worn-out song or the news of yesterday. When your judgment's a thing, others often doubt, and you end up making worse. And you end up high and dry after being run out. Then try touching wood or tapping on walls to see if Lady Luck will answer your calls. Or try whistling in the wind and go find the four-leaf clover or another bridge to burn after you've crossed over. That's it. Mm-hmm. Yes, I see at the bottom my girlfriend's written, don't read them this, it's a bit too long and depressing. We're in the second week of November, aren't we? And it's the time of year when the seasons suddenly change. The leaves come off the trees, and bam, we're in winter. And I often think about my ancestors, who must have been all landless peasants, and what it would have meant to them, you know, the consequences of a hard winter. There's also this business of the Festival of All Souls, or Halloween at the end of October, when we think about the dead, we remember the dead. So those are two elements in this poem. And there's a third element, which is this line, which comes from a book called The Vision of Piers Plowman. And it was written by William Langland in about 1350. And it's a simple line. It's a fair field brim full of folk. A fair field brim full of folk. Great. Very evocative. And being slightly autistic, I've swapped this word round, fair field, to make field fairs. And the twitchers amongst you, the ornithologists, will know what field fairs are. They're migratory thrushes. They come down from Scandinavia. We get them in Wales at this time of year. And they're on the berries, hawthorn, rowan, holly berries. Do you know what field fair are? Do you get field fairs here?
Not often.
Anyway, here we go. This is called field fairs. A fair field brim full of folk, an ancient scene field fairs evoke, when each year shows its wear and tear in sodden hills and branches bare. So as birds gorge on rowan berries red, I see a common clod inside my head, who wonders how the circle turns as his ploughshare casts aside the worms. And when I see those flocks of thrushes fly over broken bracken, reeds and rushes, I can taste the wood smoke, smell the tallow, and regret once more my fields left fallow. Now as birds taste bitter hawthorn seeds, a priest teases his black rosary beads. He chants, then unclasps the psalter, and kneels on stone before the altar. So on these first days of November, long departed souls we all remember, as day by day feathered numbers grow, as flocks fly in before the snow. That one fell rather flat because you don't know what field fairs are. I've got a note on the top of this, don't you dare read them this. Okay, this is from my girlfriend again. I used to go to a lot of open mics, and open mics in Wales, I have to say, aren't like this. They tend to be very raucous, and there's never much time for poets or poetry. The only thing I'm ever able to do is to go on between musical acts, you know. And I've been going to too many, really, now I've got sick of them, so I wrote this. And it's an amalgamation of all the worst things of local open mics. It's called My Open Mic. This is where the Emperor's new clothes masquerade as latest fashion, and troubled souls belt out dirge-like songs of endless passion. This is where those best avoided, like the childish brats they are, hug one another as they clamber to the bar. This is where the pen should be, mightier than the sword, yet nothing but an onstage duel will stop me feeling bored. This is where autistic poets, with eyes fixed straight ahead, weave more awful stitches in my tapestry of dread. This is where old has-beens wear rock persona pork pie hats and mumble folky numbers at the night's coolest cats. This is where, but for 15 minutes, a bunch of never-well-bees strum three chords wearing half-hour trilbies. And this is where a rapper machine guns the page, and this is where I wait for my turn upon the stage. something I haven't brought with me on my trip over here is my father's driving gloves. My father's old gloves. I didn't bring them, I guess I left them here. And that would never do, because they're one of my most precious possessions. And I remember my dad buying these gloves in 1968. I was 14. And they're suede, brown suede, string-back driving gloves. The sort of thing you'd have driven the RE type with. But my dad drove his old Ford Cortina with on them. And I can remember him coming in and putting them on the kitchen table, and my mother and father having a flaming row, because these represented three of my father's many weaknesses. He was a bit of a spendthrift. He was a bit of a dandy. He liked clothes, and he loved cars. If he could have afforded a Ferrari, he'd have had it out in the garage, even if us kids were starving. So I've still got these gloves, and he wore them for the last 30 years of his life. And when he died, I had them. And I get them out every winter, I put them on, and of course my dad's hands have been in these gloves. My hands go in them, I've got the same hands as my father, and they fit perfectly. I hadn't got them. But putting them on gave me many fond memories of my father. And one of the fondest memories I have of him was when he gave me my one and only driving lesson, which was 45 years ago and 500,000 miles away. And I remember everything he said to me. So this is it. It's called Driven. Now, easy does it, son, with your feet on the pedals. Best to think of treading on freshly fallen rose petals. Inch off the handbrake and let the clutch out gently. It's the same in this my Austin as it is in the Bentley. Drive round the potholes and watch out for that rut and some bloody fool who this corner may cut. Now, before this hill, try out the brakes. They should haul us up nicely if you've given two shakes. So you see how just a touch our progress has slowed. And as you're doing so well, let's try the main road. Now, don't hang about. Go on, get it into top. Then look out for a lay-by where we can safely stop. I know this crate's an old one, but you should thank the Lord. It's not some Friday afternoon diagonal Ford. And I know your Uncle Cliffy's got a white Carmen gear, a strange-looking thing with an engine in the rear. But this is just as good, and is neither cream nor white, but old English ivory, a traditional delight. And, unlike the Japanese, there's no plastic in sight. It's all British steel, thick chrome, and proper Baker light. So that was pretty much the first mile I'd driven. Sat beside my father, whose time, like his petrol, was so freely given. And though that epic journey was nigh on 50 years ago, and 500,000 miles away, my long-dead father still insists upon his stay. His same, right? But when the handbrake goes off with a satisfying click, I don't need to hear those words, as it's him that makes me tick. So when I start to turn the cold steering wheel, my dad's always there in the way I think and the way I feel.
I brought some books along. I've only brought two because they're so bloomin' heavy, the books, you know. This is called Miscellany, and it's a potpourri, really, of photographs and little rhymes. That's 8 euros. And I've also been busy making CDs for the past 2 or 3 years. And these are 6 euros each, these CDs. There's a lot of music on these, particularly this last one, which I've been working on for the past 9 months. This is called The Big Freeze, and it's about that awful weather we had back in November, December, January 2011, 2012. I don't know if you had it here, but in Wales we had temperatures of like minus 10 in the day and minus 20 at night, for 3 months solid. So this is called The Big Freeze. And when we had these temperatures, I was sat at home, and I imagined it in different parts of the country. So this starts in Shetlands, and we go to the Orkneys, Glasgow, Newcastle, the Black Country, Brecon, Bristol. And there's lots of music on here. I collaborate with a guy called David Cooper Orton, who's a jazz guitarist, who's fantastic. There's also a guy called Remy Harris, who's a gypsy jazz guitarist. He's on here. There's a girl called Caitlin Barrett, who you may have heard of. She's in a band called the Roving Crows. Have you heard the Roving Crows? You have some, yes. Yeah, sort of. Anyway, I believe Caitlin won a prize for being the best Irish folk music fiddler in 2011. I think that's right. And there's my old mate Sting on this too. He's not performing, he just reads part of the Newcastle bit. And the Angel of the North, because it all went down.
Right, I'm going to go home.
A friend of mine came to see me the other day, and he was very distraught. And he told me a tale. This is an old school friend. And when we were in school together, he went out with a girl, and we were very close. And when they left, they drifted apart. She went up north, he went to London, to the university. And he hadn't seen her for decades. And then one day, he gets this telephone call, and it's her. And she says, "Phil, your brother's given me a number. I've moved, and I'm living about four streets away from you. Would you like to see me?" Well, he was all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed about this prospect. "I'd love to." So she said to him, "Come round for supper tomorrow evening." So there he is at the appointed time, knocked on the door. He's got the flowers and the bottle of wine, a bottle of champagne. Knocked on the door. The door opens. She comes to the door, and he takes a steps back, because she certainly wasn't a girl he knew 40 years ago. He went to kiss her, and he realized she was blind drunk. They went up the hallway, and apparently she was holding onto the walls. And when they got into the living room, she promptly fell into the fireplace. Luckily, there wasn't a fire burning. And she hadn't prepared supper at all. And this is the good bit, or this is what spurred me on to write this book. She said to him, look in the fridge for something. And he opened this fridge door, and there wasn't any food in there at all. There wasn't any booze in there. It was packed full of expensive, really expensive perfume. Heard of that one before? Did you keep your perfume in the fridge? Well, she did. He reckons there was thousands of pounds worth in this fridge. So just that image just sparked me off really. So this is it. It's called This Girl's Kitchen. The kitchen drawers softly slide without any hint of rattle. And around her kitchen table, there's no space for tittle-tattle. And stacked up in her cupboards, dinner party plates and dishes, maybe confirmation that this girl has all she wishes. But her grim determination and supremacy of self will always leave this girl high on the kitchen shelf. Yet her fridge is full of good perfume, ready for heated passion. But that brave day won't come until pig's ears are back in fashion. And hidden from his prying eyes, deep under the kitchen sink, are two bottles of gin for when this girl just needs a drink. It's rather a sad poem. I went to see a friend of mine recently who was dying of cancer, and he's got 3 years left. And for some reason, no money to himself, he's made a life-size figure of himself in paper mache. It's almost as a, I don't know, maybe he's going to give this thing life somehow. Anyway, we were there with his dog, and we were looking at this figure, and I said to him, "Why didn't you make it out of wood? Surely that would be better, being a male figure, more roughly hewn, And if you wanted to make something out of paper mache, surely you should have made a woman. It's much more refined and much more like the finished article." Anyway, we joked about it, and his dog was there. And at 2 o'clock the following morning, I'd written this. It's a nonsense writing. It's called Figments. Said the young girl of paper to the old man of wood, "Your rough bark gives me palpitations, so I'd love you if I could." Said the old wooden man to the young girl of papers, "If I laid a twig on you, I'd become a coffin in the nearest undertaker's." Said the dog of flesh and blood about the old wooden man and the young girl of paper, "What a lot of cobblers. We're all just figments in the mind of our creator." Some years ago, I came into some money, the first time ever in my life that I'd had any money.
And the first thing I did was I went out and bought myself a little camper van. And I spent many, I lived in it actually 5 months. But, yeah, it's great. One day I was in it, it was tea time, and I was having tea. And I was listening to the radio, Radio 2, and there was a phone in. And people were being invited to phone up and declare what made them feel good. And a lady rang up and she said, "Do you want to know what makes me feel good? Seeing the moon in the day." And with that, I happened to look out the window, and there was this beautiful crescent moon. And it was behind a row of cricket bat willows. Do you have cricket bat willows that much? No, they're probably called something else, aren't they? Anyway, they're big willow trees. So that gave me my first two lines, and this was written in a state of euphoria called Wood Smoke. Seeing the moon in the day, and old crack willows that sway, eating 5 ripe figs, and not feeling bilious, plus the palest of skies, like those of Reveille's, feeling the happy sense of a special place, and friends with a vicar who believes in God's grace. That's confirmed by my girl with that smile on her face. Like the sudden smell of burning wood makes me feel good. The joy of the wireless, I'm on Radio 4. I listen to cricket, not knowing the score. Yes, that's me, calm as a dove and like the snake wily. So getting away with a sweet life of riding and lighting a candle, not cursing the dark. I face the world with an open heart, while knowing a love that's always the same, having nothing to lose and so much to gain. I just cracked up at the end. For the past 4 years, no longer 5 years, I've been running an event in a fringe festival in a local town. I won't tell you which one. But in this town, there's a big church. And it's opened up as a fringe venue, and I'm afraid I don't get on at all with the vicar or the church wardens. The complete miseries and trying to stop me doing things. And I did cross swords with the vicar. He's rather a bombastic character. He turned up on his first day to work, and in the car park was a top of the range Jaguar saloon car, a big black one. And I'm not talking about a cheap Jaguar, I'm talking about like a 40 grand car. And I said to him, "Are you coming to my event?" "What day is it?" He said to me, "X-Army is." He was a captain in the army, and I parked him. "What day is it?" "Saturday." "Oh, I'm taking the Jag down to Cardiff. He's serviced. Can't possibly come." So I crossed swords with him a few times, but this business of the Jaguar car, a night. So I wrote this, and it's called The Vicar's Jaguar. "The car I deserve as my due reward is something twice the size of a Honda Accord, but not abomination in the sight of the Lord, like a Corvette by Chevy or a Mustang Ford. My car must have teeth, must have claws, and purr along on 4 big paws. A fabulous saloon to my rank must be fitting, which when I travel round I can fit my holy kit in. There's nothing in the Gospels, no guidance has been given, so the car I want is a killer, not a kitten. It crouches like a cougar, as looks like a leopard, and like Muhammad Ali is a big black cruiser. Then I'd be a vicar in the company of sinners, game show hosts and glamour model swingers, greedy politicians, filthy jackpot winners, and men who've had more women than easy hot dinners. A car of pure sophistication, longest pedigree, an understated style, just like me. But I hope this desire isn't unhealthy craving for something quite false or an image deeply graven. And when I pause for thought, am I plain misbehaving? So should I get a car that's face and planet saving? XFs are very nice, XJs even better. But for this vehicular old vicular, it must have XS and its letters." just going to do two more.
Do three more if you want.
I'll do two more and have a drink.
And weigh it up then.
Yeah.
Sadly, my mother suffered from dementia towards the last 10 years of her life, which became a huge problem for her and us all. And I've written this, which is rather a sad poem, although it's worth mocking in a way, but it pains me to read it. And it's called Confuse the Hours. It's seldom that you see her, except they're in the mirror. It's then you glimpse the mysterious face of that woman who's taking over your place. She stole money from your purse, and more deceives, pulled the rug from your feet, and lost the keys. Such pure pandemonium, and to make you a mockery, parlors hide the sink with your best broken crockery. She eats your food, so you hide it in the shed, and leaves out in the rain almost every book you've read. Much mayhem, mischief, and misunderstanding, in all of which this wicked witch has had a hand in. Every night as you sleep, she's standing by the bed, so such vivid dreams they flicker through your head. Whilst downstairs an army of furniture removers shifts the heavy sofa through some tight manoeuvres. She's touched the clocks, confused the hours, and tampered with the fairy's flowers. So your roses, peace, and Nina Harkness, now in the garden, bloom in darkness. And like a full moon, she can curdle fresh milk, and she's even stranger than the shore of Acapulco. To her ailment, she's a martyr, quite the little Joan of Arc. So you search the drawers for tinder and some means to make a spark. This is the last one I'm going to do, unless you really want me to do another one, but this is called White Rabbits, and it's about writing verse and performing it. And I dedicate it to all of you poets and songwriters. Whether it's people like us, with every advantage, or those of more modest means, we cannot break out of our cages, except in the flickering spin of our dreams. And yet, now and then, we poor creatures of habit somehow pull from the hat a kicking white rabbit. And once we've done that, never losing the touch with bunnies galore back there in the hatch. And some of us learn how to rattle the bars by falling in love while gazing at stars, or forcing our pens to fill awful blank pages before strutting our stuff on rough, splintered stages. Yet it's mumbling metaphors, illegible scrawl, when, day or night, the muse comes to call. So I'm counting the syllables, chancing designs, and coaxing some meaning from grace-gifted lines. Then by joining the dots and crossing the T's, I'm now stood on this stage with trembling knees, and laying myself bare, which is frail living proof that I'm striking the deal with unavoidable truth. Thanks for listening. Be great.
Give us one more, go on.
One very good way of writing a poem, and it's one I've used, is to get some verse and then chip away at it a word at a time, a line at a time. And if you keep on, you'll end up with something which is purely your own. I do this with song lyrics, and what I tend to do is I don't keep on right to the end. I leave bits of them in, so that there's the ghost of the original song in my new poem. Yeah, and there's one called My Favorite Things. You know it, I'm sure. Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah.
So this is My Favorite Things. Hot sun and sand, and feeling so smitten, verse that comes easy and stays clearly written, penning a poem in big coloured biros, burning a carpet with horrid kitsch spirals. Venice in autumn, then Mallorca in spring. These are a few of my favourite things. Credit, can't get it, but dosh their inner noodles, pillars and potions and standard clip poodles, even the apple, the snake and the sin, you loving me throughout thick and thin. Curlews that cry with the stars on their wings, these are a few of my favourite things. Girls in tight dresses, bright smiles on their faces, whirls in Vienna, black corsets with laces, summer silk shirts, cool as milk on my skin, winter fur hat there on hair turning thin. Lennon, McCartney, and the Sultans of Swing, these are a few of my favourite things. When the frost bites, when the ice stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favourite things, and then I don't feel so awful.